I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Free falling. Well, I wouldn't say the Yankees are exactly free falling now, but three games over 500 ain't what they signed up for. Yankee Report brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries, every battery for every need, and by Wallhour's Paint and Design. Wallhour Paint and Design, celebrating 100 years. Visit shop.wallhour.com. Sweeney Murdy here with the Yankee Report. And Sweeney, it's so weird not having a Friday night game. I guess we're used to it in early April when they have the Thursday, Saturday things. But this is so odd not having a game to talk about when there was no rain out. It just wasn't on the schedule.
Yeah, the two-game interleague series, cause you know, you don't notice it when, I guess in past years, it's kind of a 2-2. We've had series where it would be 2 in Philly and 2 in New York because they're, you know, geographically close together, and it would look like a four-game series, but they're really two-game series. I didn't ask why they had to split them up, but they did, and that's, you know, you wouldn't have cared if it was a Monday and a Tuesday or a Tuesday and a Wednesday, and but for whatever reason, it was a Friday and without a game, so there you go.
Well, Monday and Friday off this week, so they've had plenty of rest time. Is that a good thing for this team?
I mean, you know, ask me after they play the games. You know, the results will tell you. Like, I can tell you it's a good thing, but if they lose, then it's clearly a bad thing, right? You know, I guess you're always looking for ways to stretch out the pitchers this year, especially trying to get back to the 162, and now you're past the 60-game mark, so you're into this area where nobody reached last year. And if you look at the schedule, there is now one more off day. After Monday, there is one more off day until July 5th, you know, basically until the All-Star break. After Monday, there's two off days. So yeah, there's, you know, I guess you always want to draw it up ideally, like you'd like to space them out perfectly. Doesn't always work that way. You know, the results will tell you if it was a good thing or not.
Yeah, and it's amazing that no matter what the Twins are, the Yankees just seem to just come in and crush them. I mean, they're not very good this year. They're having a bad season. But, you know, they had two games, and then you figure, okay, they're going to sweep. And then what happened to their closer? I mean, it was nine pitches, two-run home runs with Chapman. What was going on there?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, over the course of the three games, you know, the Yankees hit better. And the first two nights they won some good games by putting some, you know, some runs on the board, which have been hard to come by. Now, the Twins have not been a very good pitching staff this year. They're near the bottom of the league in many categories. So it's hard to read too much into the Yankees' offensive outburst until you see if there's any carryover that lasts not just a couple of days, but, you know, over the course of weeks. So let's take some time to figure out what happened there. A closer blew a two-run lead in the ninth inning. It's not unusual. Aroldis Chapman has been great this year. The one save that he did blow, the Yankees won the game. He hasn't hurt them yet this year. He was just not there, and I don't know if there's a great reason for it. His fastball velocity was down, and when I say down, it was, you know, I think I saw 95, which is unusual because, you know, that's pretty low. That's like somebody else firing up an 82 and saying, "What happened?" And so he had, he clearly had trouble finding it. He's throwing some sliders up early to Polanco and fell behind him. And now he doesn't have a good fastball, and the guys are sitting on it, you know. So, and you've got some guys who are, you know, one swing away from doing what they did with Donaldson and Cruz. So you've got some really good hitters, a closer who, you know, I don't know if he would have found it if he had more pitches, but there really wasn't much time to do anything. So, they jumped on him. You know, Donaldson hit a 1-0, Cruz hit the first pitch. So there wasn't much time to figure out how to get through those at-bats.
Yeah, it's amazing now that 95 is considered, he's throwing 101, 102. Yeah. But it's 95 usually is pretty adequate for anybody, but for him, it's way down from his norm.
Well, but listen, if there's anybody else, if you saw somebody else who threw 95 and all of a sudden he's throwing 89 or 90, then you're like, well, hey, what's wrong? You know, it's all relative, but yeah, I mean, you're dropping 5 miles an hour off your fastball. And they're clearly not comfortable. And it was it's not like he had trouble getting loose. It was a hot, sweaty night, you know. So I don't know. We'll see what happens the next time out. He had worked twice in the last week, so you're kind of walking that fine line of is he working too much? Is he not working enough? But those are things you kind of just have to wade through during the course of the year. It was not an unusually long period of time without activity. It's not like he hadn't pitched in 8 or 9 days. It's just, you know, I don't know what it was. And sometimes the other team wins too. That's just how it works.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to just tip your cap, as Tim McCarver used to say. Well, the funny thing is we had a caller earlier about Mike Marshall, who passed a couple of weeks ago, and you know, 13 games in a row he pitched. He pitched over 200 innings in relief one season. And, you know, you look at that and you look at guys now, well, they pitched the night before. I don't know if they can go again. It's a whole different kettle of fish with the bullpen, isn't it?
Well, there's injury history involved there and lots of money that you have invested in these guys. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, we're trying to compare. Okay, so the year that he threw 106, he was 31 years old. He actually ended up lasting the big leagues till he threw 90 games at age 36, so he was unusually durable for a guy who went through that. But you're talking about different level of investment in players and trying to protect your investment, and those are also the exceptions, not the norm. You know, Mike Marsh threw 106 games. What do you think would happen if you had 20 different pitchers throw 100 appearances this year? How many of them you think would survive till the next year? How many think would make 106? I mean, you know, it's really hard to pick out the guys who did great. I mean, why doesn't everybody hit 400? Ted Williams did it. You know, it's really hard to pick out the outliers and say, wow, this is how everybody should do it. Nobody else ever did that.
Well, you know, Sweeney, the problem, though, is when somebody is outstanding, there's always now the question, okay, what are they doing? Are they cheating? And this is what you're getting with Jacob deGrom now. There was, he's signing out a video. He went to his belt here. You've got the whole Gerrit Cole thing. And my question to you about the Gerrit Cole thing was, obviously, the Yankees are a very buttoned-up organization, and you know they were going to ask him about that during the media conference. Why didn't they have kind of a rehearsed or a better answer that didn't come off as, well, I'm not going to lie to you, and I'm not going to tell you the truth, so I'm going to just not say anything. You know, why he was kind of hung out to dry there, no?
I mean, hung out to dry would indicate that everybody just kind of ignored it. I don't know the answer to that yet. I don't know how the machinations of that worked. But, you know, even Gerrit Cole is probably pretty well aware of where things are going there. And he's got his own representation, a strong team, too. So there's a lot of people who could have come up with a better answer. And I don't know if he ever expected to get asked directly if he had used that product and what answer he's going to give, but he clearly could have given a better one. He couldn't have given a worse one. But you're right, he also chose not to lie at that point. But it's in a weird spot. You know, this isn't I don't know what he would have tried to say if he had, you know, rehearsed it more and gotten to a better point. But you're at a point now where he did let some of his pitching do his talking for him. Unfortunately, we're going to keep scrutinizing this. This isn't, oh, look, he pitched well on Wednesday, so must be fine, case closed. We're going to be looking at this for a while. And I think you're going to have to catch some guys in order to keep this going. You know, the umpires are going to have to do this. They're going to have to be vigilant about it, and they're going to have to check guys, and you're going to have to get guys caught. You know, I use the same theory that I did with PED users when there are a lot of reasons not to equate the two, but I'm going to in just this one instance. You know, when drug testing was first put in and people were testing positive and people are saying, see, it's not working. They're still doing it. Well, it's working because you're catching them. They're always going to be trying to do it. You know, if a state trooper came back and said, didn't give out any speeding tickets, everybody's driving a speed limit, would you believe that's true? No. So everybody is trying to get that next edge, and you're going to have to catch people. In catching people is the deterrent, not saying you're going to look for it. So I think we're going to have to find some of these guys and watch these suspensions happen in order to understand that they are cracking down on this.
Yeah, and it's a question, even though it's one of those that Bill Bratton's got a book out now, and you know, talking about broken windows and things like that. You know, a police enforcement issue. And the idea is if you don't enforce existing laws, they tend to get ignored. And people think, oh, well, the laws on the books have been there for a long time, but nobody cares about it. So, hey, I can do it. And once that happens, it becomes kind of an industry-wide practice. Everybody thinks, well, I guess it's okay then. And then all of a sudden, baseball turns around and says, well, no, it's not okay. We're going to enforce it. So I know there's a lot of judgments that fans make and we all make on the moral characters of these guys. But if it's kind of accepted standard practice, you know, theoretically, there's a 70-mile-an-hour speed limit. People go 75 and they think, oh, that's okay. 5 miles an hour is no big deal. It's not enforced. Okay. But then you go 80 miles an hour and all of a sudden, well, okay, you're going to get a ticket and reckless driving and all that kind of thing. So I think it's a complicated situation, and baseball itself is at fault for this happening because they didn't enforce it all these years.
I'm glad you latched on to my speeding ticket analogy. I think it really fits very well. So
well, I came up with that on my own. Forward. I didn't latch on to yours, sweetie.
Come on. Said it 60 seconds ago. So thanks for pushing that one forward.
No.
I think the interesting subplot here is the idea of the union versus the league, and what, you know, Pete Alonso articulated that pretty well. And the idea that, you know, these are some of the conversations I had with people, you know, the day after Cole's statement and the day that Alonso spoke, is that, you know, you have changes that were made to the baseball, and that is one major factor that is suppressing runs, right? Suppressing scoring and offense. It's not necessarily suppressing scoring, but, you know, it is suppressing the offense with batting average and things like that. But you were talking about the effects of a baseball, and it's kind of hard to measure and quantify because nobody's real, forthright in what the ball was, what the ball is, and just kind of, you know, the variations in that. But that's something that's controlled by the league and by the, you know, by the owners as producing the baseball. Now it's funny that you're getting players on the hook for using this, and the things that people are talking to me about. This is the fight between, in a negotiating year, this is the fight between players and owners happening in real time here. You know, the players are saying, look, you did something to the ball. And the owners say, oh, well, listen, you're going to do something to that ball, so let's stop doing that. And you're trying to put it back on them. It's kind of an interesting little spin here that happens in a negotiating year, as it's just a little part of the subplot here that I find kind of fascinating, that's what kind of people were talking to me about earlier in the week.
Well, I was going to bring this up with Eddie, but, you know, get you into this thing with Alonso's allegations. I don't believe for a minute that baseball did that because there are going to be a lot of hitters as free agents this year, as opposed to last year when he said there are a lot of pitchers. I don't think that they would try to tamper with the fabric of the sport to suppress salaries necessarily, but I do think they want to restore the balance between pitching and hitting, and they thought, okay, too many home runs, that's crazy, let's cut down on that. Maybe they've gone a little bit too far in terms of altering the ball, but I don't think they were doing it just for money. What do you think?
I've been reading A Whole Different Ball Game, which is Marvin Miller's basic autobiography, and reading through his history of running the Players Union. And I'm kind of reading that as kind of a primer for stuff I want to do with leading up to his Hall of Fame induction. But I've been talking to different people as I've read different sections of this, you know, who have a little bit of history with the union and with just, you know, following the labor negotiations of baseball over the course of the last several decades. And basically, you know, nobody puts it past anybody. There is a long history of manipulating salaries, manipulating for just that reason, for manipulating the salaries. And, you know, even just going to the service time issue, that whole idea is about not paying money to mm-hmm. players at that time. So there, and you can go back different ways. There is a long history of this. So there is distrust there. And the people I was talking to earlier this week, they're clearly, you know, players' side. But, you know, that while not outright accusing them of this the way Alonso did, they're not backing away from that saying, oh, that's preposterous. There's clearly believability from people on the players' side that that is a way to manipulate salaries. Because there's a long history of it throughout the course of the game.
Right. I mean, there's collusion.
And nobody believes it's going away or that it has gone away. It just takes different forms. That's why there is so much, you know, distrust built in to the players and owners relationship that even last year in a non-negotiating year when everyone was just trying to get on the field to, you know, get some product on the field and get some revenue back in, that it was a long fight to get that. There's always distrust built in. And again, the people I was talking to aren't outright accusing them of it, but they're not putting it past anybody because they know the history here and what's at stake. And it's always money at stake.
Always the dollar. Yeah, you're right. But that to me is a bridge too far. But you're absolutely right, Sweeney. At this point, you know, with all these conspiracy theories and everything else, who knows what to believe? Okay, we're out of time, but thank you, and we'll talk again. But I came up with that speeding thing months ago, and I did it years ago.
I've been doing it the PED.
I brought it up decades ago.
I really thought
of this thing. Yeah,
I was in kindergarten when I brought that up.
I was just out of the cradle and age one, and I
thought. Oh, I wasn't born then. You're much older than me. Much, much. So, yeah, you're right.
See?
You win.
Okay. All right. See, I won, but I think I lost.